Let's see what's happening with the planets. On Saturday, this coming Saturday, next Saturday, 8th, Venus will move into Aquarius in the sky, and will remain there for, I think, a little less than a month. I don't have the date in front of me. Venus usually stays in the sign for a month. The Sun stays in a sign for a month. Mercury stays for a month. Venus stays for a month. Mars stays for a month. Usually and roughly. Mars, but sometimes planets will go into retrograde or backward motion. And then they'll end up staying in signs much longer. Mars went into Gemini back in, September. Saturn moved in July. I think it was like September, but Mars is in Gemini for about 6 months instead of one, six. So they go backward motion and they go forward and takes a lot longer. Anyway, Venus is moving on Saturday into Aquarius, which is a pretty good spot for Venus. It's the sign of Saturn, but Venus and Saturn are considered to be friends. Problem is that Rahu, that's Rahu, and the triptych, painting on the left, the guy with this very frightful looking face, that's Rahu. So he's a dark, demoniac, destructive, shadowy figure. And he brings the shadow up. We discussed this last time. Last we talked about the eclipse. And we were talking about Rahu. Anyway, Rahu's there right now in Aquarius. And Venus and Rahu will be together for the length of time that Venus is in Aquarius, which is about a month. So Venus is what? The planet of? Love and relationships. Okay. Now, does that mean that anybody who's in a relationship will be adversely affected? Not necessarily. Not necessarily. If you're having, you know, you really have to look at these things subjectively from each person's point of view. You know, that's why you can't just open the newspaper under horoscopes and expect to get real insight. You know, if you're going to open the newspaper and read horoscopes, you could read any of the 12. You'll probably find something that works for you. You know, because it's very, very general. Not that it doesn't have some basis, but it's just too general. Anyway, Venus with Rahu would more likely affect somebody who's already having difficulty in their relationship. One thing you absolutely do not want to do in that month is get married. So if none of you are planning a marriage in the coming month, then good. Because that's the absolute worst time. Venus and Rahu. People who would get married with Venus and Rahu together in the chart, again, depending what house it ends up in, you know, depending what time of day to get married, you more or less are safe to bet that that relationship will break up at some point in time. Well, this is only, it's less than a month. It's less than a month. The month after, and I have three marriages sitting on my desk that I have to calculate for three couples who are patiently waiting for me to do this. But there's nothing right now that I would give them. But immediately after that, Venus moves into Pisces. And Venus is exalted in Pisces. So you're only going to get an exalted Venus when Venus is as powerful as it can be. Once a year, and roughly again for a month, right? So Venus will be in Pisces, which is absolutely excellent. And you, if I can find, judging by the other planets, etc., in the chart, that'll be a month that I'll be probably recommending marriage. Yeah, it would be somewhere in April. I haven't done all the calculating yet, but yes, somewhere in April. Would it also, could we also surmise that if Venus is with Rahu, would it be a good time to begin a relationship? Be careful.
It's better to start in April.
It's like, wait there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you see, Venus with Rahu, you know, one thing you don't want is the Rahu person. Who is unavailable, not present, who may carry too much of the shadow. As I often say to people, do you want a relationship or do you want a project?
Aspects of the shadow, what would that be? I mean, is that just emotional availability?
Aspects of the shadow would be emotional unavailability, addiction, obsession, compulsion, codependency, dishonesty, deceit. One person leaning too much on the other, meaning one person takes too much and doesn't give so much. It could be just about anything.
A politician, perhaps.
A politician, perhaps, as one thing does another. Yeah. Relationship versus project, yes?
Can it work in someone's marriage that way, or does it all depend on?
What you mean?
If it's in Aquarius now, would it affect the person's current marriage because they're in together?
Well, it might. It's not likely to change the dynamic of the marriage because. What's important in astrology is calculating the start time of whatever it is you do. The expression is, timing is everything, right? We say this. But astrology is where you find out what timing is. There's nothing better or of greater value than astrology to determine the best times, in my experience. So, start times are important because when we do a chart, what do we take? The start time of your entrance into the world, right? Not just when you come out of the womb. The actual start time is when? No. Not conception is, yes, another start time. And that's how we gauge pregnancy and what will happen during the pregnancy. But the start time when you come out of the womb is
no.
Although that's reasonable, it's when the child takes its first breath. Tap dance. Yeah, no. No, when it takes its first breath, because then it is now interacting with its environment. It has taken something from its environment. That's when the karmic wheel kicks into motion. That's it. And that's why the doctor, you know, they don't always whack them, but it's like, and then you hear, and then in comes the vocal presentation, and
we're off.
We're off and running. So when you marry, or anything, your start time is of vital importance. And if you... I mean, I've looked at marriage charts not so long ago, people who, you know, who remember their marriage. A lot of people do remember, obviously, the marriage date, but many people will remember the time of day that the marriage began. And that's what we're talking about, beginning. See, say, for example, some wedding ceremonies are 5 minutes long. If you go to the registry office, which is, you know, in America, we might call that the justice of the peace or whatever. or you can go to the Elvis marital place in Vegas or wherever, you know. Oh, but some marriage ceremonies may go on for an hour, maybe for 2 hours. You see, it doesn't matter. It's when it begins. That's what's important. Because that is the inception of this thing. It's not when the guy says, I now pronounce you man and wife. It isn't. It's when it begins. Because now we've set the ball rolling. So that is a birth moment. So that's how it's calculated. We've looked, we looked recently at some marriages. People who had been married a long time and found, but never had their charts calculated, never bothered to do the marriage times when they got married, but found them to be exceedingly accurate. Did we not? Mm-hmm. Startlingly so.
He remembered when it started.
How do you, by start,
are
you talking about the signing of the registry?
No. She walked in other words.
Well, she walked in.
When the ceremony begins. So, you know, when they start playing the music or when she walks into the church, everybody stands. That's the beginning point. Or at the registry, whatever they say, okay, dearly beloved, we are gathered here in the presence of the state. And the flag, or whatever.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Drew, did you say when it begins? So if you say you met a guy before this date, and nothing's happened, so is that a beginning?
Of a relationship, you're asking?
Yes. So is that okay then?
Well, you couldn't have met a person. You see, here's the thing. Some people meet and they may not go into a relationship for several weeks, several months, or several years. Mm-hmm. That happens. So the meeting, that's not really the beginning of the relationship because the relationship didn't begin till much later. So it was a meeting, but it didn't start the relationship at that time. Now did it. You know, hi, how are you? Nice to meet you. You know. Maybe.
Yeah, keep one eye open and watch the walk.
Wait 5 minutes.
The first time he buys you chips.
on the way home from the local bar. So,
this is the start of something special.
So, yeah.
Huge astrological significance, seriously, now. With a bride deciding to, you know, this thing about drive around the church one more time, you know, that.
I thought that was in the movies.
Yeah.
He calculated my sister's one, and it was like, you need to get your ass in. No driving around. Yeah. Get in.
Like, it could be 10 minutes, 20 minutes, let's stay around the block, but that could actually be a completely different astrological.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. The difference between, you know, kind of whatever, 2 o'clock.
Well.
So basically, that's a jinxed wedding.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
She's not on time, yeah.
Or yeah,
it could go the other way. It could make it superb, yeah.
You see, when you calculate a time range to do something, when I give somebody a time to do something, and it's not just marriage, it could be to file a business, it could be to buy a piece of property, it could be to move into your place, which we did recently for Monsey, for example. And of course, we did here. Usually, the window is anywhere from a half an hour to 2 hours. In winter, the days are very short. So if we find a good time to do something during daylight hours, it's not going to last very long. So normally, what would be a two-hour period is now a half hour period. We had about a half hour, 40 minutes. I gave you a very short one also, I remember. So in winter, it will shrink it more.
And then you can pick it even closer by the period you're going to go into.
Yeah, then we'll whittle it down to within a few minutes. That's what we did.
Because
we did for you as too. We also did it with yours.
The difference between starting off your relationship in a kink.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It can make a big difference. Because just like you have your planetary periods, those of you who have had a Vedic chart done know you have major planetary periods, minor planetary periods, sub-periods. And if you've studied your chart and looked at the periods from your childhood, you will see, that's how you learn astrology, by the way. You'll see that they're generally pretty accurate. Mm-hmm. You know. But when you start something like moving in or marriage, it has planetary periods that will then be set into motion and will then unfold throughout your lifetime. And, you know.
Well, we can see it in our marriage chart.
Yeah, they work. They work. You know, with Monty, we looked at, I figured out one for her, then I said, well, wait a second now. You know, this is a really good chart and a really good moon position, except this starts your marriage under...
Where are you getting married?
No, I'm sorry, move in. Excuse me. It starts to move in under, I think it was a Rahu instead of a Jupiter, right?
Yeah.
So then we did it, I think, for the next day. Okay. Supposing you have an hour window. And your marriage ceremony must begin within that hour. And it doesn't. And you, let's say we give you from 1 to 2 p.m. And here it is approaching. It's 5 minutes to 2. And somebody, they're pushing. Yeah, right. Or they're pushing her out of the limo or whatever. And it starts a few minutes later. Well, then it's like the clock clicking over. You know, instead of being here, it's we're off. It takes the whole wheel and turns it, and all the planets will move by one house. You know.
So do you have planets you actually, if they've missed that window?
Oh yeah.
You'd actually recommend them to cancel and to.
Oh yeah.
And they do.
Well, it doesn't work like that. I give them the window, and I say, this is the time to do it. Sometimes I would say, but I'm not there, you know. So sometimes I'll say, look, usually I don't say this. I'll say, look, whatever you do, do not start after 2 o'clock, because that's a dreadful time to get married, which oftentimes may be the case, you know. I took my daughter to Spain 1 year for, this is her grade 12 graduation, leaving cert graduation. So her gift was to come to Ireland and to Spain. And sometimes it's as though your intelligence gets stolen, you know, by fate. So I'm sitting there and I'm calculating. That was 03. I'm calculating away, and I'm finding a good day for her to leave America to come over to Ireland, so that the trip will be great. And I've got all the information correct, but what I overlook is I have the wrong year. I don't have the right year in there. And now, that is extremely rare that I would do that. And I found what I thought to be a very good time for her to leave. And then, of course, I recalculated my calculations. And again, same thing. This is a good time. And then I told her, and she said, yeah, that's fine. And I went ahead and bought her ticket. Then, I don't know, a week later, I was looking at it, recalculated it again. No, or looked at it and said, oh my God, it's the wrong year. And so I popped in the new year, or the current year, and it wasn't good. It was Moon Mars or
yeah, you two were at one another.
Something which meant conflict, you know, argument, criticism, disagreement. And guess what the trip was like? It was exactly like that. Conflict, argument, disagreement. So, what I'm saying is, you know, this was a real obvious thing. I should have caught it. Mm-hmm. But I didn't.
You need to work something out.
So, yeah, you know, it's almost like this was removed. Because when you check something, then you recheck it, and you don't see it.
So maybe you both learned from the conflict.
Oh, yeah, we learned.
Maybe that's the way.
We learned in Madrid. We learned in Toledo. We learned in Granada. We learned in Malaga. We learned all over Spain. God bless her. I love her dearly. Okay, so timing is important. When you're doing things of that are very, very important, meaning have a consequence that will last for the rest of your life. Like, I think, you know, buying a car, buying a house. See, when you think about stuff like this, because this, most people don't think about it, let's be honest. It either clicks in and makes complete sense to you, or you think it's utter madness. However you like. It's either spot on and makes complete sense, or it's the most ridiculous thing you ever heard. I've met both kinds of people. So I thought I would just read a few things from the Narada Purana, which is an interesting book. Narada Purana. Purana, there are 18 Puranas in the Vedas. Purana literally means old. And the Puranas deal with creation, universal creation, myths, theories, how things are supposed to have taken place. They deal with genealogies, lines of progenitors, lines of kings, sages, wise people, incarnations of God, of Vishnu. They deal with pretty much every subject under the sun. They deal with gemology, gemstones.
Moldology.
Moles, where moles are on the body. Really? And what they mean.
Really? Mm.
They deal with astrology, astronomy, grammar, word etymology, psychology, history.
And then the context for each of the different castes.
Yeah. Ayurvedic medicine. Vastu, Vedic feng shui. Everything. Different ones, different things. Then there are Puranas in the mode of goodness. Satya. There are Puranas in the mode of passion. For people in the mode of passion, which is humans. Rajas, and there are Puranas in the mode of ignorance for people who are would be more concerned about being destructive, or how shall we say, in the mode of goodness, people would be mostly self-satisfied and they'd be conditioned by happiness and knowledge. They wouldn't have a lot of material desires. In the mode of passion, people would have tons of material desires, but they'd want to fulfill them through constructive means. in the mode of ignorance, people have tons of material desires, but they'd want to fulfill them through destructive means, through manipulation or intimidation, for example, or criminal enterprise, which is popular in certain parts of the city. So the Narada, Purana Narada, was a guy, is a sage. This one is in the mode of goodness. So it's a more enlightened one. So I thought I'd just read a few things. What sin or negative karmic reaction is there that cannot be destroyed by the association of a great soul? Service rendered to great souls immediately vanquishes the reactions to all negative actions performed knowingly or unknowingly, or by the compulsion of others, that others force you to do. Right. So, if there's somebody who is a good soul and worth emulating, who has good qualities, who has a good heart, who has good intent, who's here to help the world, not putting themselves first, I mean, however you want to draw your conclusion about a person, then it is of great benefit to you to A, hang out with such a soul, or B, render service to such a soul. One of the popular ones of recent day is Amachi, Mother Ama. Who's the other lady? Mother Mira. These ladies draw, I've not seen them myself, but they draw vast crowds.
I met Mother Mira in New York.
And?
Yeah, just amazing. I'm Mother Ama too, but Mother Mira really touched my soul. You know, you go up and you kneel down and you hold her feet and then you sit up and you look in her eyes.
Now, it's interesting because you're saying that you touched her feet. In India, when they meet a guru figure or a saintly person, they will bow down and they touch the feet. When you touch this person's feet, you are transferring your negative karma to that person. This is understood in India. And if the person touches you on the head after that, he's completing the circle and transferring it back to you. He's not taking on your karma. Because, you know, if a saintly person was to take on all the karma of Tom, Dick, and Harry, Tom, Dick, and Hari Das, who happens to, you know, touch their feet, it would be a lot of karma to take on. But I'm just telling you that. Anyway, so the standard way that, you know, when people just in India, you'll see that happen quite frequently, you know. But this will be just even a stranger will come up to a saintly person and do that, you know. So this is a little different.
They don't always give it back.
You know.
They'll take it on.
Well, you see, if you're actually taking initiation or accepting a guru officially, the guru he's taking it on. At least some of it. So, anyway, always good to be around highly conscious souls. Easy to find them? Not that easy. The following persons lose all sense of discrimination. Those who are arrogant due to wealth, those who are oppressed by hunger, those who are overwhelmed by lust, and those who are overly proud of themselves. If a wicked person becomes wealthy, this becomes the cause of great suffering in the world. So, discrimination is something that's obviously very important. Discrimination, discretion. It's effectively using the capacity of judgment. Some people, when I talk like this, they get very upset at me, with me, and say, but you're judging people. No, judgment and discrimination are different. I think it's because the word discrimination is connected so often to racial discrimination. So people just think that means it's a prejudice. It's not. You have to make certain kinds of judgments. It's very important, and you're using discretion or discrimination. And it's hard enough as it is to make the correct, the right, the proper judgments, you know, on a day-to-day basis, let alone if you fall into one of the following categories. Then you could easily lose discretion. And again, arrogant due to wealth. Sometimes if we're too, you know, wealth of course is a good thing, but sometimes people become inflated due to having wealth, as if wealth gives them qualities. You know, great quality. Wealth does not produce great qualities necessarily. You know, and oftentimes people just by virtue of wealth are looked upon and looked up to and praised and given respect by virtue of the fact that they have wealth. They're not always deserving of that respect, is the point here. Those who are oppressed by hunger, you can't think straight when you're hungry. You can't teach anybody when their bellies are rumbling. Those who are overwhelmed by lust, well, we know what that's like. According to Vedic understanding, women are fire. Men are butter. And when the butter gets close to the fire, it melts. It melts quickly and completely. So when, now, can women be overwhelmed by lust? Oh, I think so. And again, according to Vedic understanding, women are, in fact, in the Narada Pancharatra, another different book by Narada, it actually says in there that women are 8 times lustier than men. Can it, girls? Lust for sex. Lust for sex, yeah. Now, that's a generalization.
Every guy would love to hear that.
Yeah. Men love to hear that. Sex. Now, here's the thing. It is oftentimes, women are not as ready or chomping at the bit like men would be. Okay? But men are very easy to get going, but they burn out fairly quickly. Whereas women, once they're in the mood and you get them revved up and going, they don't want to stop.
Never any better.
And they can go on and on. Furthermore, women can have multiple orgasms very easily and quite happily. Men, you know, not so common. not as common. But that is, that's not my opinion. That's what the Vedas say.
But he was a sage, so what would he know?
Ooh, Narada, yeah. What would he know? He was a celibate sage. What would he know?
Did he ever buy anyone chips?
I don't think so. Maybe rice. All right, so...
That reference there to, you know, obsessed by lust, is that directed at men in that particular passage?
No.
Is he warning, like, against...
No, it's not directed at men. It's, you know, I mean, there's that other saying that, you know, when you say to a man, well, which head are you thinking with?
Yeah.
You know, this one or the other one.
Yeah.
So, I mean, let's be honest, a lot of men have gotten themselves into a lot of trouble. Well, I mean, women have too, you know.
So would you categorize lust with desire? The same thing, desiring?
Well, yeah, I mean, no, this is more like lust. I mean, two people who have a relationship or are heading into a relationship, you know, it's not like desire for each other and sexual congress is a bad thing. That's not what we're trying to say here. It's you know, the guy who at work who's the manager, decides to have sex with one of his employees in the back room. That would be an example. Then where there's, you know, yeah, and you're going to do something that is going to lead down a very difficult path. That's what we're talking about here. We're not just talking about people who desire each other.
But like in English, we would say lust for power as well. It's not just.
Yeah, but in this case, it doesn't mean power. But that comes up in some of these other. Statements. Here's the definition of a good person. Very simple one. A good person, even when harassed and troubled, acts in a way that is pleasing to all. Just as sandalwood, even when cut to pieces, renders the atmosphere fragrant. Is that lovely?
But then you feel he's going to get you back somehow. You're saying that somebody's annoyed and they just smile. Is it that they're not taking you back?
No, it's not that they're annoyed. It's that somebody is mistreating the person, or that person is acting inappropriately, or however they may be acting. But the good person, the person of good qualities, will tolerate that, will be genteel, will be a gentleman or a gentle lady, will let it pass, will let it slide, you know, and not challenge it. Say,
not reacting to it.
But even more than that, being gracious. You know, and the analogy of cutting sandalwood, even if you're cutting it, it's still, but it's all the, it's filled with fragrance there. It's filled with fragrance, you know.
So that's kind of like turning the other cheek.
Yeah, absolutely. But this is turning the other fragrant cheek. You know. So, something to strive for, certainly. This is Kalindi's request that we read a few of these chestnuts here. Okay. A poor man is condemned almost like a dead body. So what it's saying there is poverty is very, very difficult. It's almost like a condemnation. We should remember, not that we look down on a poor person, not that we shouldn't help a poor person, but we should also realize that on some level, on a karmic level, this person has unfortunately attracted this reality for themselves. Not a great reality.
Is that by faith or by?
By the actions done by them in a previous lifetime. It has to be based on the acceptance of reincarnation. Yeah, whatever you're experiencing in this lifetime is a result of actions performed by you generally in the previous lifetime, sometimes even lifetimes prior to that. But for the most part, it's the previous lifetime.
So you cannot make up for it in that lifetime?
You can make up for it, yeah. But you see, you're destined to suffer and enjoy a certain amount. But you can make up for it. You can turn your karma around, change your karma, reduce the difficult karma, or increase the positive karma. Whether that's going to happen in this same lifetime is anybody's guess. You may not get the results, the good results, until the next lifetime. Hard to say. You know, if somebody hurts you at some point in time, legitimately so, they did hurt you, you're justified in your feelings of anger, hurt, resentment, right? A year goes by, and you feel exactly the same way as you did before, a year ago. What do you think about that? 10 years goes by and you feel exactly the same way. In fact, angrier now. My first marriage ended. It was a good marriage and we rarely ever argued. But we were going in different directions and the marriage ended. And then all of a sudden, what didn't need to be legal became legal and legal stuff. And it generated a lot of anger. I became very angry because of the legal things that were going on. And then I went, and so this went on for several months. And then I went to see this Ayurvedic physician one day. And they take your pulses, you know, your pitta, vata, and kapha pulses. And she said to me, Drew, the way you're going right now, there's so much anger, so much fire in your system, that if you keep this up, a year from now, you're going to have a heart problem. So I said, okay. And I walked out of her office outside. And I looked up at the heavens. I remember this because it's like it was yesterday. And I said, I'm done. I'm finished with it. And I cut it loose. And I didn't indulge in anger anymore. And that was 20 years ago. And I didn't get a heart problem. It's a choice. You know, I felt justified in being angry for whatever reason. Whether I was justified or not didn't matter. So it was having a negative effect in my life right there. You know, it was going to harm my health.
What about the people that don't know?
Well, most people don't know. And then, you know, so many people, they harbor anger or resentment or criticism or blame or guilt or frustration. And then they carry it for many, many years. And then after 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, they get a disease. They get a health problem, sometimes a major one. And they go, why is this happening to me? Why me? Why do I have a heart problem? Why do I have cancer? Well, think about it. What have you been feeling for the past 20 years? Look at this anger, this resentment, this guilt, this blame, this wound. And you've been, you know, some people let things eat at them. You know how we say, what's eating you? What does cancer do in the body? It eats you. It's the body eating the body. Isn't it? And they get cancer, and this is a big shock. It's not. Not to me.
A lot of people are getting brain tumors lately. I'm aware of anyway.
Well, a tumor is an imbalance of the kapha element in the body, according to Ayurveda. And it's intransigence. People who are stuck and they're holding on to something and they won't let it go. And it becomes a mass. And it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And they won't let go. Yeah.
Can we let go? I mean, can we make it disappear without
serving? Well, you could, but it depends on how advanced it is. Some people will be told that they have a tumor, and then they'll go away and work on it themselves, and the tumor will disappear. This happens.
When I was a kid, my dad, I think two occasions I remember. One was my next door neighbor, so I was 10. She got breast cancer, and then a relative of a relative, she got breast cancer, and both of them learned to meditate, just got this one mantra. And they had both been given 6 months to live, and they were put on an Indian paste, an Ayurvedic paste, and both their cancers were gone, and they survived. So I think, you know, when they tell you that your time's up, I think you can, because of meditating, it somehow removes it from them. The stress wasn't there, and it was cured.
Moves the energy. Let's just say this. Disease means that the energy that is meant to be flowing through is not flowing. Something has become stuck or stagnant or stopped up. And that's when disease takes root and develops. Right? So if you can remove or get it moving again, that energy, and remove the blockage, then it is to say that, you know, healing can take place. But, you know, I mean, this Kalindi's story is a great example. How sometimes people are too far advanced.
And in those cases, would you care to say anything about the pros and cons of suicide?
Suicide is always a bad idea. I mean, in the sense that we know it here. It's never good to take your life. And if you have somebody else, like, how do they say it? What's the...
Euthanasia.
Which is getting more and more common. In euthanasia, it might be a solution if you're in dire pain for you. But the person who's doing it to you is going to have participate in that karma of ending your life, no doubt. It is acceptable. In the Vedas, there are many stories of kings or sages or certain people who feel that their life and their purpose is done, and they don't want to keep hanging around. And they're not sickly. We're not talking about sickly people, because sickly people is a little bit different.
And they're in the right mind.
They're in the right mind. They're not trying to take too many pills or hang themselves from the chandelier. Not like that. But it's like, okay, I'm finished with this life. I've done what I have to do. And so what they will do is they will sit on the bank of the Ganges in a secluded spot in the forest, for example, and they'll begin to fast. That's the best way. You just stop eating and stop drinking, and I guarantee you, you will expire, you know, 30 days. I mean, I don't know.
That's really what I had in mind, but I think the answer is it depends on the category of
it depends.
Thing you're dealing with.
It depends. Now, you know, I do not fault people who are in unbelievable pain, and the pain doesn't go away, for wanting to end that. You know, I wouldn't be criticizing that. But just to complete the explanation, people who commit suicide in an untimely manner, especially young people, I don't want to say just young people, but, you know, they're depressed, they're despondent, or they have their heart broken, or something in England, Wales, there's a whole town of teenagers that started offing themselves some kind of crazy pact that they had. What happens is whatever state of mind, don't forget we've talked about this many, many times, whatever state of mind you are at when you die, that state of mind goes with you. You don't escape it. It goes with you. What Dreams May Come.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah. So, you know, that was the guy's wife, Robin Williams' wife, Annabelle Shoria, was depressed because her children were killed in a car accident, if I remember correctly, which would depress anybody. But she couldn't snap out of it. She took her life and she ended up in this dark place. Like the movie, that's how it works. You end up in a limbo state where you're neither here nor there, and the soul is wandering aimlessly. It's a very, very dark place. You end up as a ghostly being, or as the Buddhists like to call them, hungry ghosts. You do not want to go there. If you're really so fed up with life, or you have a disease, or you're just too old, or whatever. Fast. It's acceptable, according to the Vedic understanding. Except there's no negative karma that comes with it. But they don't just fast, they meditate. They sit on the bank of the Ganges, and they meditate. What, for half an hour a day? Or 20 minutes in the morning and 20 in the evening? Before and after the dinner, they don't eat? No. They meditate around the clock. And they focus on God. They focus on spirit.
That's an offering to God, then.
Yes, an offering to God. Whatever you do, how many times have we said, you do as an offering to God. I'm giving up my life now for the following reasons. I'm doing this as an offering unto you so that I can come to you. That's a whole different attitude than sitting there with razor blades. And
the others escape. Yeah.
The others escape.
Exactly.
Yeah, here, one is an exit. Mm-hmm. The other is an escape. Mm-hmm. All right. Very good. Let's meditate. All right. Breathe, relax, and let go. Relax and let go. Allow the stress, tension, fear, and apprehension to drain from your body totally, completely. Relax, Breathe and let go. Deeply relax. And let go. High above, a beautiful beam of radiant light comes down from the heavens, down, down, all the way down, entering through the top of your head, expanding throughout your head, torso, arms, legs, out the bottom of your feet, into the earth below. Breathe, relax, and let go. Deeply, deeply relax. Go now to your sanctuary, which is the place where you begin your meditation. Allow your subconscious to present you with your sanctuary, which could be any place, a beautiful place in nature. It's best if it's not familiar to you. Allow yourself to sit comfortably in your sanctuary where you are safe, secure, and at peace. Become aware of your physical body. The real you, the self, is separate from your body. So let us get in touch with the soul and identify with the soul. I am divine. I am divine. I am divine. I am divine. I am a godly being. 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 I am pure spirit. 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 I am pure love. I am pure love. I am pure love. I am pure love. I am divine, perfect, and complete. I am divine, perfect, and complete. I am divine, perfect, and complete. I am pure spirit. look up to the heavens and give thanks, returning to earth, to consciousness, reconnecting to your body, and when you're ready, open your eyes. Very good. Thank you. Om Tat Sat.